Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of the O'Leary Partners Observations, aka the OPO podcast, which is a series of one-of-a-kind observations provoking aha moments for your personal or professional life from influential Floridian professionals, top healthcare physicians, and UBS thought leaders or partners from our orbit. I'm your host, Gabrielle O'Leary, a senior wealth strategy associate for the O'Leary Partners at UBS Private Wealth Management. I'm located in Miami, Florida, and I could be reached at 212-626-8735 or gabrielle.o'leary@ubs.com. Our special guests here today are Daniel Sansaroli and Ainsley Carbone from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Dan and Ainsley, thank you so much for joining me here today for our Beyond the 4% Rule, Am I Ready for Retirement episode. To give the audience a brief agenda, in this episode, we'll be walking you through key elements of planning for retirement. First, we'll start off with the UBS Wealth Way, a framework that helps design an investment strategy to meet your goals, followed by a deep dive into market conditions. Next, we'll explore asset allocation and spending considerations. And finally, we'll wrap it up with insights on how to assess your overall retirement readiness. So let's get started. I'll kick off by saying that I'm incredibly honored to have two distinguished guests from our UBS Chief Investment Office with us on the OPO podcast. Here at UBS Private Wealth Management O'Leary Partners, we have the unique privilege of leveraging our firm's tremendous thought leadership by gaining access to some of the industry's top intellectual capital, insights, and resources. And this allows us to bring the very best attention and expertise to our clients. Our guests here today, Daniel Sansaroli and Ainsley Carbone from the UBS Chief Investment Office, will share with us their special perspectives and provide valuable insights from the forefront of the financial world. And to give the audience some background on them, Daniel Sansaroli is a Managing Director and Head of America's Portfolio Strategy in UBS Wealthway Solutions. In this role, Dan advises on asset allocation, goals-based investing, private markets, and hedge fund strategies for ultra-high net worth clients and institutions. And I'll also share a quick anecdote that the O'Leary Partners have had a lot of face time with Dan recently, as he recently did a stellar job presenting on a UBS market update and retirement planning webinar for us with an association in Miami, where the feedback was so positive that we were actually encouraged to produce a recording of it. So what better way to do that than turn it into a podcast? So Dan, thank you so much for your continued support.
Pleasure to be here today.
Great. And my other exceptional guest has a lot of experience in the UBS studio as well. And you may have even seen her on the UBS trending videos, Ainsley Carbone, who is a retirement strategist in the UBS Chief Investment Office. Ainsley contributes to the intellectual capital offering from UBS Wealthway and leads the Modern Retirement Monthly publication series. Ainsley, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So in previous OPO episodes, I talked a bunch about UBS Wealthway, and it's really wonderful to have guests here today that help craft and champion the messages behind it at the UBS Chief Investment Office, which, to recap, UBS Wealthway is a three-pronged comprehensive approach to wealth management that really focuses on aligning your financial strategy with your life goals. UBS Wealthway is defined by the 3L acronym, which stands for liquidity, longevity, and legacy. And our goal here is to help investors build a more resilient and purpose-driven financial plan for retirement by reducing the role of reliance on luck for success. So that first bucket, the first L, the liquidity strategy, ensures that capital preservation for near-term cash flow needs while allowing long-term assets to recover from market downturns. The second L, the longevity strategy, focuses on providing reliable cash flow for lifetime expenses, promoting financial freedom in retirement. And finally, the last L, the legacy strategy, aims to maximize growth for philanthropic goals and future generations. And here at UBS, we believe together that the three L's create a dynamic, personalized portfolio that adapts as your family's needs and goals evolve. And just as an investor's needs and goals evolve, financial markets do as well. So Dan, what do you think the key financial risks retirees face in this current market environment? And what's the CIO's outlook ahead?
Yeah, the current environment has many retirees both happy as well as cautious around taking risks with all of the geopolitical sensitivities that are rising. Obviously, we're in a year of an election, which also tends to come with heightened volatility, where retirees have been very happy is as they've been approaching retirement, if they had had their investments actually at work, the equity markets have had a tremendous run in the last couple of years, producing in excess of 12 to 14% returns, depending on which year you look at in the last 3 years, and really strengthen their overall balance sheet as they've been preparing for retirement, or if they've been in the early stages of retirement, where they have the most of those assets still at work in their investment account. However, in this environment, what it's ultimately produced is an environment where there are concerns of extremely high and expensive equity valuations on U.S. equities in particular, as those U.S. equities have hit new all-time highs. Now, one of the interesting things about all-time highs is momentum is one of the biggest proponents in the equity market, that all-time highs tend to beget more all-time highs when you look historically at the data, until there is a major economic event. And that, you know, economies go through cycles. We will see a correction usually somewhere in a 5 to 7 year period. Those periods have been elongated by actions that areas like the Federal Reserve have recently taken in terms of heightening. And then in the last month, we actually saw that they made an aggressive move to lower rates. And so that brings us to the other key financial risk that many retirees are facing, which is in the last couple of years, as the Federal Reserve was trying to fight high levels of inflation, which can challenge the sustainability of a retirement plan. And we can talk about that more later in the podcast. But as they went down that path to lower inflation, we saw rates essentially go from zero 4 years ago with the most aggressive rate hiking cycle, where rates went up to about 5.4, 5.5%. And so that was a big boom for bond investors and many retirees into leaning into bonds and were able to capture those higher rates. The risk in this environment for retirees is those rates are coming down quite aggressively. Just a year ago, about this time, in October actually, a year ago, we saw rates hit a peak. The 10-year Treasury was at 5%. And today, when we look at the 10-year Treasury, we're at about 3.7%. And so we've lost a lot of that income generation. And those elevated valuations on the equity market also come with lower expectations in terms of what the return will be over the long term for equities. Valuations are a very poor predictor of short-term performance in the equity market. And as I mentioned before, that's one of the reasons you don't want to run away just because you have high equity valuations or you're at all-time highs. Because when we think about this all together, lower returns are the biggest risk for setting up your retirement, particularly if you're relying on those historical returns. Trends like deglobalization, heightened geopolitical risks, they can drag down those returns, they can increase volatility, and they can lead to what we refer to as sequencing risk, which is where retirees unfortunately lock in a temporary loss because they have spending needs when they spend out of their account. And we want to make sure we smooth that out. And that goes back to exactly what you discussed, Gabrielle, around the liquidity strategy and the importance of having a liquidity strategy so that you don't lock in those losses. Even with all of this, what I would say is the biggest risk for retirees is sitting on too much cash, particularly as those rates do come down. Aligning assets and liabilities with that UBS wealth layer approach, liquidity and longevity strategy in particular, relative to the timing of your liquidity needs over time, can smooth out many of those risks. And as an example of that, you know, even with high equity valuations, when we look at the data and we look at the retirement resources that you need for more than 16 years, historically, the S&P has never produced a negative return for anyone who has held it for a 16-year period without making adjustments. If you just went into the index and held it for 16 years or longer, you've ended up with a positive return for those investment horizons. And so as we're thinking about retirement, those 30, 40-year retirements, you know, there's a portion of your assets that you're not going to need to touch for that long term. And the opportunity cost is, if you're not invested, you're not going to compound over time, even though there can be some catastrophic events as the market turns over the long term. Being out of the market or staying at that time in the market is much more important than timing the market. Because as a general rule of thumb, if we can get anywhere between a 6% and 7% return, you're going to double your assets every 10 to 12 years in your investment account it just by that magic of compounding in the market.
Great. Thank you so much for your commentary on that. And just to kind of circle back on your comment in regards to cash, how much cash do you believe that a retiree should hold in retirement?
So as we think about the cash levels, we think about what the retirement needs are for the next 3 to 5 years in terms of what withdrawals you're going to be making from your investment account. You should also think about that net of any income which you may have. Some, you know, want to take into account things like Social Security and other forms of income that you're ultimately taking. The reason we recommend 3 to 5 years worth of cash is because that is the typical duration of a bear market. That's how long it takes to go from a peak on average down to a trough and then fully recover. And so if we have 3 to 5 years worth of cash resources, generally invested in high quality bonds, so we're still generating income off of them, we'll feel secure that we know that we're going to be able to ride out the storm, and those risk assets, as you had mentioned, can continue to appreciate and enhance our retirement in the long term.
Mm-hmm. And riding out the storm is the key to the game here. And for our listeners here in Florida, we're actually experiencing a hurricane here right now. So couldn't be more timely with those comments, Dan. And when you talk about achieving long-term returns, I realize that some of our listeners here, they don't have retirement coming up, right? So with that in investing for the long term, where are investors finding the best opportunities ahead in order to achieve what you say between a 6 to 8% an annualized return in a portfolio is ideal from a compounding perspective?
Well, the real key here is developing a diversified asset allocation that aligns with your overall risk tolerance in combination with that liquidity strategy. Liquidity strategy is going to give you that security for the conservative assets. But really, as we think about the investment horizon and your ability to stay invested when you hit bumps in the road, that's going to really calibrate to what the best asset allocation is for you. If you're unable to stay on board with your asset allocation because it drew down, let's say 25%, well, a 60-40 portfolio may not be right for you, right? And that's a typical drawdown on a 60-40 portfolio. You might need to be a little more conservative. You're going to do that at the sacrifice of return because equities tend to be the growth driver in a portfolio. But when we're looking at constructing a portfolio, the first aspect here is not trying to think about where the biggest opportunities are, because opportunities when it comes to growth tend to be widespread across the market in terms of the factors that end up driving it. Yes, you have winners and you have some that win more than others, like we've seen with the Magnificent Seven, but that can also come with other levels of risk. And so as we're looking at designing, coming up with a strategic asset allocation, first, that aligns to your investment horizon and your risk tolerance. And then second, as we're looking at the opportunities right now, given where we are in the economic cycle, where the Fed is starting to cut, we're seeing the labor market is still strong, but it is starting to weaken. We're seeing that savings rates for the average individual in the country has come down to about 2%, which is still a cushion, but not a large cushion. And inflation is still playing through the economy, much higher than what we saw for the last decade. The places that we're focusing is we don't see a recession in the next 12 months, but we're seeing more of an attractive nature to moving into quality stocks, tilting your asset allocation just a little bit into quality companies that have high free cash flow yield, high return on invested capital. We're also looking on the fixed income side to lock in the rates and optimize how much we have getting out of cash because those rates are coming down. And those high rates generally benefited high yielding cash accounts that are going to lose that income very quickly. And so we're looking to lock in the yields, but we don't want to take too much duration risk. In other words, we don't want to go into very long duration bonds, long maturity bonds, because there are economic challenges like the deficit that could ultimately in the longer term end up being a challenge for the bond market. But for the intermediate to short duration bonds, we see the opportunity that they should be insulated from any potential backup in rates, where rates could potentially rise because there could be another inflation scare. Or if we go into recession, that tends to be beneficial for those bonds because rates typically come down even further when the Fed cuts to stimulate the economy. So a mix of stocks and bonds. We do like alternative investments or adding additional premium, but you need to right-size that relative to your liquidity needs. So if you're having a 15-year plus horizon for a chunk of your assets, we generally recommend considering adding anywhere from 15 to 20% of your allocation to areas like private equity, private credit for enhanced income, or even private infrastructure because of the focus right now on renewable energy, data centers, cell towers, and physical infrastructure, bridges and roads that have really been underinvested, particularly in the U.S., but are global initiatives to pursue areas like clean energy.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much for your comments on that. You hit the nail on the head, especially from a portfolio construction standpoint. And just as a follow-up from that, I know our team gets a lot of questions on what are the ideal target allocation. So if we were to kind of break this up into three different cohorts. Let's say for a younger investor thinking about retirement who could be in their 20s and 30s versus a more seasoned investors in their 40s and 50s. And then you think about the third bucket with 60s and 70s. How much equities, fixed income, cash, and alternatives are you typically recommending in a portfolio?
The typical portfolio for younger investors is much more aggressive. We refer to it usually somewhere around a 75-25 equity bond mix. Right? And that comes with a return expectation, you know, around 7.5% with close to an 11% volatility, which means that you could, and you're likely, as we go through market cycles, to experience a drawdown somewhere in the range of about 25-35%. Now, if you're riding that out and you have the investment horizon, generally the compounding of wealth at that higher level is going to offset that. We find that most younger individuals, they have a little more risk tolerance because they have income to be able to ride out their storm. And, you know, in that regard, we still want a liquidity strategy. It just isn't fully funded for what our spending needs are. You know, we typically recommend so that you can take those risks that when you're in your working years, you have a 6 to 12 month emergency fund in case you lose your job or in case something catastrophic happens. Maybe you need to have a surgery. And as we all know, healthcare expenses can be quite expensive. For the older investors, the beauty of that UBS WealthWay strategy that we talked about is it automatically adjusts how much you have in the liquidity strategy as you get closer to retirement. And then when you're in your retirement years, you're going to have a fully funded liquidity strategy, which is automatically going to de-risk your overall portfolio strategy. So you can maintain that more aggressive stance, that 75-25, if that is a risk that you're willing to continue to assume. But if that is going to be counterbalanced by a larger liquidity portfolio, so when you put it together, we often end up with something that is more along the lines of a 50% equity, 50% bond portfolio. The last aspect here is we haven't talked about the legacy strategy. And as most people get closer in their older years, they have built up excess savings, particularly for the generation that is right now either in retirement or close to retirement. We see in the data that they have excess savings. And that's where we're able to take those excess savings and put them in a legacy strategy for the benefit of others, whether that's for future generations or whether it's for philanthropy, what impact you want to have when you're gone. And you can start having that impact now with those excess savings, or even when after you're gone. But for those assets, they're unencumbered, meaning that, you know, you're not spending from them, you're not relying on them for your lifestyle. And ultimately, that means that you can take on a lot more illiquidity risk and alternatives to boost the return, so you have a bigger impact when you're alive and when you're gone. But also, you can take on more risk just in general in order to grow those assets because the sequencing risks that we talked about before really are not applicable. You're going to be able to hold back if you see a significant market pullback from distributing those assets so that you can continue to grow them if that's so what you wish. You could set up those excess funds to have a much more meaningful impact with a much riskier profile because you're not relying on them.
Mm-hmm. Great. And when you think about portfolio construction in general, and asset allocation obviously plays a paramount role in making sure that you have the ideal portfolio. So all your points were sort of spot on how to gear that up. And if you could really fulfill your goals when it comes to that legacy strategy, I feel like that's even a cherry on top, right? But The goal here is you get to retirement, right? You've worked so hard to get to this point, and you want to be able to enjoy the fruits of your labor. So when you start to think about your withdrawal strategy, from time to time when speaking to retirees, our team talks about the idea of the legendary 4% rule, which has come up a bunch. And yes, we realize it's a helpful starting point, and it's important to remember that everyone's retirement financial journey is unique. Can you walk us through what is the 4% rule, and do you think it's still a reliable guide for retirement withdrawals?
Yes, I'm happy to walk through the 4% rule. The 4% rule was actually the result of a large study that took place of markets back in the 70s. They published a report in the academic community called the Trinity Study in the 1990s. And what they outlined in this study was historically retirees could have spent about 4% of their total portfolio value and maintained a 30-year retirement. So this has generally been a rule of thumb that has been used by retirees and advisors to help estimate what that sustainable withdrawal rate is. The rule was designed just across the historic dynamics that were placed, that were at play basically for the 50 years before and leading up to the 1970s. We obviously had several market cycles in there, but the economy was very different. The life expectancies were quite different, and it gave a good estimate for what you could spend. So it's basically saying during the first year of your retirement, you can take 4% out of those assets and then grow that by inflation for the next 30 years. And essentially, there was almost a zero probability that you would run out of money for your retirement. Generally, it's a good rule to start the conversation, but we find that it's too broad to apply to any specific situation, particularly in light of the inflationary environment that we're currently in and the market dynamics that I've discussed before, where returns are likely to be significantly lower than what we've seen historically.
Right. And with returns being lower, that's definitely going to create a much more challenging market environment. And it was really interesting. I saw this great article in the Wall Street Journal recently that was talking about how retirement can be a beautiful phase of life, but planning for it can be a puzzle. And there's so many unknown variables here, like how long is your retirement going to last? Investors really need to decide when are they going to leave work? Where are they going to live? How are they going to spend their days? And really, what is it going to all costs. So your points here about your withdrawal strategy is, sure, you can't just say, yes, 4% applies to everybody because you don't really know what that particular person's investment goals or strategy may be, right? So a question that our team gets all of the time is, am I saving enough given that? So what strategies do you think retirees should create a resilient retirement portfolio that they don't outlive their savings in today's market?
That is the critical question, right? And in order to answer it, we need to evaluate basically four dimensions. We've touched on some of them already, right? In order to have a sustainable withdrawal retirement strategy, first, we need to understand the expected duration of retirement life expectancy. When we look at the data, the challenge with the 4% rule is that when they were looking at life expectancy for an individual was about 30 years. We also need to look at what you're trying to support. Most people are trying to support themselves and their spouse. And when you look at the actuarial tables, when we look at that, it tends to imply that there is a 50% probability that one of you will make it. If you're already 65 years old and going into retirement, that one of you will actually live till 90 years old. There's a 50% chance. That is a big longevity risk that we need to be able to manage, right? So we want to really size, not for a 30-year retirement, but at a minimum of a 40-year retirement when we're thinking about the retirement strategy. And that's really going to influence whether you've saved or not enough. The second factor is what we just talked about in terms of the risk and return in your asset allocation, what you're able to generate in returns, because the goal is to continue to enhance your retirement assets during your retirement years so you don't need to save nearly as much and you're not being overly conservative in terms of what your lifestyle is. The third factor is how your spending changes through retirement, and that also relates to inflation. And then the last factor is one that is a little uncomfortable. It's what is the failure rate of your plan? Any plan has the chance that you will have to modify it. And so we're not talking about the chances you'll run out of money. We're talking about the chances that in order to make sure that you don't run out of money, that you have to start spending less and you have to sacrifice some of your lifestyle. When we put that all together, with our research, we're able to look at forward-looking return expectations across the market for a typical 60-40 portfolio with that liquidity strategy. You know, we generally have a 6% expected return and a 9% volatility. And we run thousands upon thousands of simulations to understand what could happen in poor markets so that we manage those tail risks. So if we get poor markets performance, that you won't have to adjust your strategy. We also believe that going forward that we'll generally have an average inflation rate of 2.4%. So when we put that all together, what we find is for a typical 40-year retirement, this implies that the day that you retire, you likely need between 25 and 30 times your first year withdrawals that you're planning on making throughout your retirement. And we're going to adjust that amount every single year by that 2.4% inflation to maintain your lifestyle. It's a cost of living adjustment of 2.4%. So as an example, if we think about this, if you wanted to support a $250,000 lifestyle, where you were making $250,000 withdrawals from your retirement assets each year, and then adjusting that by 2.4% for cost of living, for a 40-year retirement, that moderate portfolio would need about $6 million in assets today to support that 40-year retirement. So $250,000, if you think about that, 25 times $250,000, 30 to 25 times that $250,000, which is where we get the $6 million, you're getting the benefit of an extra 10 years of retirement because you're keeping that money at work. We're not saving 40 years worth of that $250,000. We're saving 25 to 30 times whatever that is. So basically, we're saving 30 years to get 40 years worth of benefit.
That makes a lot of sense, Dan. So let's zero in more on your comments in regards to spending. And Ainsley, I was pretty interested because when we have a lot of our client reviews and we're discussing retirement with clients, the focus often revolves around factors like maintaining lifestyle or supporting health and wellness. I know that's a top priority down here in South Florida. And then you're also thinking about planning for family and legacy goals. But we know that critical factor that can greatly influence these plans is the impact of market conditions on spending. A lot of that is what Dan just touched on earlier. So how do you think the fluctuating markets will affect a retiree's ability to be able to meet some of their goals?
Well, let's say you have one portfolio. You have all of your assets in one investment portfolio, and that's the portfolio that you're going to use not just for future spending, but also for your spending today. If you're relying on that portfolio to support your spending today in retirement, well, when you go through periods of poor market performance or poor investment returns, then what happens is you're going to have those years where the portfolio drops. If you're still pulling assets out of that portfolio to support your spending, what happens is you're exposing yourself to what Dan spoke to earlier, the sequence of returns risk, which is essentially periods of poor investment returns coupled with portfolio withdrawals. And what happens is as the portfolio falls, you're taking out a larger portion of that portfolio. And over time, the result can be that you are prematurely depleting that portfolio. So essentially, the amount that you thought you could spend before that portfolio had fallen, if you still plan to pull that from your assets, then what happens is you're taking a larger portion out and that withdrawal rate or that spending amount is no longer viable. So a series of poor market conditions are only really going to be damaging to your ability to spend if you're pulling assets from that portfolio. Because if you're not pulling assets from that portfolio, if it's going up and down, well, there's not going to really have an impact because it's still going to be able to recover over time. So to avoid this sequence of returns risk, you could just stop or reduce the amount of money that you're taking from your portfolio at that time. But that's obviously not ideal for most people, especially retirees who are relying on their wealth in order to support their lifestyle now that they're no longer working and have a salary to live off of. So yeah, most people aren't able to do this, nor are they going to want to have to adjust their spending as needed with those fluctuating portfolio returns. So with this in mind, this is really where the liquidity strategy comes into play. The purpose of the liquidity strategy, again, Dan mentioned this, but I think it's important to go over as you're talking about how market conditions can impact spending. When you have that liquidity strategy, if you have all of the resources that you need in order to meet your needs in the near term, then what it does is it essentially gives the dollars in your long-term investment portfolio, it gives them patience to ride out that market volatility so that it can recover. And that's when you can start spending again from that longer-term portfolio. So ideally, this is something that you would set up before you go through that market volatility period, because it's difficult to create that buffer if you're already in that period of poor performance. But yeah, so in short, market conditions can impact your ability to spend in retirement, but that doesn't have to be the case. As long as you're able to set up your portfolio in a way to essentially provide a little bit of a buffer from your spending and that market performance or that portfolio performance, then you're able to make sure that you can continue spending as you wish, regardless of those market conditions.
And I like how you were saying about setting up a buffer, because we see this all the time too. Sometimes the emotions get the best of us, right? We saw that just a couple weeks ago when you start to think about the Japanese yen carry trade and you think about that unraveling, as well as with a lot of volatility and technology. And retirement is so emotional, right? Investing in general is emotional, but retirement assets especially, because you need that nest egg and you want that stability. So having that buffer really allows you to kind of be able to say, okay, I've already reserved those assets for the short term that can handle my spending needs while I'm still helping maintain it to grow, and then in turn can provide that peace of mind and financial stability. So what we see is retirement is often, you know, a time of what you want, that financial stability, but we do know that spending patterns are definitely going to change significantly during different phases. We see that in some of the early years, a lot of the retiree clients that we have, they're doing a lot of travel or leisure. And then in the later stages, we're noticing that healthcare becomes a major focus, where retirees are now shifting their priorities. So what Dan was talking about earlier, rising healthcare costs, a lot of people are worried about that. How do you think spending patterns typically evolve during various stages of retirement?
So I think a lot of times as someone's entering retirement and they're trying to sit there and forecast what their spending is going to be throughout those years in order to know if what they've saved is enough, what they do is they essentially take their full budget and apply one constant inflation rate to it and adjust it over time to say, okay, this is how much I'm going to be spending over my lifetime. But when we look at the data of what the average retiree spends in the US, what we see is that they're not actually increasing their spending each year in line with inflation. What happens is, like you said earlier, people at the beginning of retirement, that's when they're a little bit more active. They're excited about this transition that they're making. They are checking all those things off their bucket list. They're traveling, spending time with family, maybe making purchases, something to just celebrate that time. So their spending is higher at the beginning of inflation. But then as they progress through retirement, what's happening is their spending is increasing, but it's not increasing as much as inflation is. So it's not rising as fast as inflation. That happens because what's going on there is their activity typically tends to slow as they're going towards the middle of retirement. And what we see in the data is that as you hit around age 80, 85, closer maybe to 90, what happens is their spending starts to go up again. So beginning, it's rising, but not as fast as inflation. Middle, it kind of stays where it is for a little bit, but then it starts to rise a lot faster than inflation. And the reason for that is because typically what happens is they're definitely slowing down at that point, but their needs are changing. Typically, they have much more of their needs are directed towards personal related needs, maybe long-term care, but then also medical needs. So those healthcare costs. And those two costs, long-term care and healthcare, those typically rise faster than inflation. So not only are those items rising faster than inflation, but also the amount of your budget is going to be allocated more and more to those spending items. And so it just kind of has this effect where as you get later into retirement, your spending is going to increase because a lot of your spending is going towards those long-term care costs and healthcare costs. Not everyone's going to have those long-term care costs, but certainly everyone will have those rising medical costs.
Wow, really interesting, and could be very unfortunate for some people too. I know the client sent me an article from CNBC. The title of it was "Rising Healthcare Costs Are Threatening to Turn Retirement Dreams into Retirement Nightmares." What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something if you're not planning for it, it can absolutely be scary. The same thing goes with long-term care costs. I think that one even more so because, like I said before, everyone's going to have those healthcare costs, but not everyone's going to have the long-term care costs. But because those long-term care costs can be so significant, if you do in fact need that care, if someone goes through retirement and doesn't end up planning for it, well, they're going to get to the end of the retirement when they probably have spent maybe a decent amount of their wealth, and they're going to realize, okay, I have this significant cost that I absolutely have to make. I can't really go without it. And I think that's kind of where that nightmare scenario comes into play. It's certainly a very stressful time, not for just those people who are living through it, but everyone in the family who's involved with that. So yes, I do think that healthcare and long-term care costs and the higher inflation that's associated with those costs, I do think that can create a nightmare. But I think that nightmare is something that you can avoid if you are planning proactively for it.
Right. I agree too. I think planning proactively for it is beyond crucial, and working with a financial advisor team to assist you is great too. And just for the audience point of view, do you have any data in regards to what the average retiree spends on healthcare in retirement?
I mean, it can change pretty significantly. I think if you're looking at it from someone who's maybe age, a couple who's age 65, it could be anywhere from around $400,000 to $600,000. When we look at that data, though, that's typically for an average household. What that is not accounting for is the fact that someone who is a household who makes more than the average household, they typically are then subject to income-related surcharges. So they're called income-related monthly adjustment amounts. And that's an income surcharge that you or someone who's in a higher income household is subject to as it relates to their Part B and Part D premiums. And it's not just a little amount. It's something that can maybe, I want to say, quadruple the amount of monthly premiums that you would pay for that insurance. And that's just for one individual. Then you think about two individuals. And so when it comes to trying to understand, you know, how much the average person would need to have saved for their healthcare costs or what the average person would spend on healthcare throughout retirement, I think personally that's something that really needs to be considered and worked through with a financial advisor who can kind of sit down and help you look at all those moving aspects, all those moving points, because it is something that if you have one little aspect of your plan, like you are someone who does have higher income than that average household, that's going to be something that can create a significantly different number. And so you don't want to end up just planning for what you think the average household would spend on healthcare costs in retirement, because it could create a situation where you end up not having saved or set aside enough to cover those healthcare costs.
Very smart idea. And I appreciate you sharing all that information with me. And I know you'd mentioned that really not planning for it is evidently a huge mistake. And we realize that when it comes to retirement planning, you could be the most seasoned investor and you could fall prey to some common pitfalls that could undermine your long-term financial security. And while obviously saving for retirement is a crucial step, I think it's equally important to be aware of some of the mistakes that could perhaps derail some of these efforts. So in your experience, Ainsley, what do you think some of the biggest retirement planning mistakes investors are making?
Well, one would definitely be, like I said before, the long-term care costs, because it's something that not everyone is going to be incurring. I think people like to think a little bit more optimistically than realistically when it comes to the likelihood of needing care. So since they can be so significant, if you go through retirement and don't plan for it, it can be really difficult to kind of recover from that and figure out how to meet those costs while also meeting other spending objectives. But another mistake that I find that people make in terms of spending would be just assuming that your spending is going to increase in line with inflation every single year. Because like I said, when we look at the data, that's for the average household, again, not everyone's going to fall in line with that average household. But I think when we look at that data, since it does show that spending increases over time, but not as fast as inflation during some periods of retirement, that just tells us that your spending patterns are going to change for reasons other than inflation. Not only that, but when we look at economy-wide inflation, the consumer price index, the way that that's calculated is looking at different spending baskets and how those different components of CPI or the consumer price index looks at how those items are changing in price over time. And if your spending baskets look different than what is captured by the consumer price index components, then that inflation rate isn't going to necessarily be representative of your own personal inflation rate. It's certainly a great starting point, but it's not the only thing that is needed in terms of forecasting your spending for retirement. For most people, I'd suggest using that as a starting point and then trying to think a little bit more deliberately about what your spending patterns might actually be as you progress through your retirement years. And that's something that it's not an easy process, but it's a process that you can go through to hopefully find a little bit more of an accurate or realistic spending forecast. And when you have a more accurate spending forecast that you can put into the financial plan, that financial plan is going to be able to produce a little bit more of an accurate or realistic output.
That's really helpful. I couldn't agree more with you. And you start to think about it in general, I think all of your points could really only help ensuring peace of mind. So to really be able to navigate this critical life stage successfully, to your point, engaging in a financial advisor team to discuss key strategies is without a doubt a very helpful plan of action. So I know we talked a lot about some of the negatives. So really, what are some of the positives that you're seeing or your opinion on a few best practices that investors are doing in order to truly be retirement ready?
So there are a lot of moving parts. I mean, Dan spoke to several different factors that can impact your ability to live comfortably in retirement. A lot of them are unknown, and that can make it not only difficult to plan for, but stressful to plan for. And so I certainly recommend everyone work with a financial advisor and when it comes to trying to figure out if you're ready for retirement, because they've helped hundreds of other people and it's likely that they've seen things that you aren't necessarily thinking of. So they can help you uncover some of the unknown risks that you might be exposed to. And when you're sitting down and working with them, I'd say a few best practices would be to don't automatically assume that expenses will always increase with inflation. Like I said, not the average household. We see that it doesn't increase in line with inflation every year. So another best practice in line with that would be to be as specific as possible when developing goals for your financial plan, because the more accurate the input, the more accurate the output of that financial plan. If you're assuming one spending amount, but what you're actually spending is going to be different, well, that means that retirement readiness might not actually be ready for the retirement that you're putting into that plan. You want to make sure that you're planning for what you're actually going to be spending rather than just a number that you're kind of making a very rough or ballpark estimate on. So don't automatically assume that your expenses will increase in line with inflation. Be as specific as you can be when developing goals for your financial plan. In doing so, I think it can be helpful to think of your retirement in different phases. Like I said, the beginning, you're a little bit more active. That's typically when spending is going to be maybe a little bit higher because you're taking those vacations and traveling. In the middle of retirement, that might be where your spending or your activity starts to fall a little bit, maybe staying home a little bit more. With that less active lifestyle, you may have your spending fall a little bit. And then as you get later into retirement, like we said, spending can rise because you have those personal related needs and the health needs. So every phase of retirement is going to be different for everyone, but I think it can be helpful to think of your retirement in those phases because then you can get a better understanding of what you might be doing, what you want to be doing, and then that will just lead you into figuring out what your spending might look like at those periods. And then lastly, I'd say it's really important to make sure you're paying attention to the impact of healthcare costs throughout retirement and also planning for that potential of needing long-term care later on in retirement and how you would end up paying for that care if in fact you did need it.
Thank you for that, Ainsley. I appreciate it. And really on the topic of preparing for unknown risks, I'll say that here at the O'Leary Partners, we think that you could never be too old to start a financial plan, right? A financial plan could benefit younger investors. Revisiting your financial plan throughout various stages of your life is so important too for a more seasoned investor. Or if you think about it, even perhaps getting a second opinion on your financial plan is very important. So being being able to have this kind of guideline that you're working with to help you with all the unknown stressors that could face or on the unexpected costs that could arise. Sure, these could be some factors that we're talking about today, especially with healthcare costs, but really who knows what could be the cost that we talk about 10, 20, 30 years from now, right? So as we conclude our conversation, I think it's really important to highlight the key insights that truly make a difference in retirement planning. And I know Dan and Ainsley shared so much valuable information, but there's usually one standout realization that creates a lasting impact. So Dan, I'll start with you. What's your biggest aha moment you'd like our audience to take away from our discussion today?
The biggest aha moment is that most people start planning on retirement way too late. The opportunity cost of not thinking about how to save even just a little bit when you first start your job and you're in your 20s, or even when you're in your 40s and starting to have children, that's when we see most people start to generate a little excess wealth relative to what their needs are and be able to better structure that in a tax-efficient way. That's really the aha moment. And one of the things that Ainsley has done a tremendous job here on UBS as a retirement strategist is thinking about what the right strategy is in order to save in a savings waterfall to maximize the benefit of your retirement assets decades before you're going to be in retirement. It makes a world of a difference. That is something, unfortunately, from a financial literacy perspective, we don't have enough education around getting your money to work, having that long-term perspective, not reacting to market volatility. That's one of the reasons why the 401k is just so incredibly valuable, because you're not looking at your account every single day and you're funding it. Hopefully, you're funding it and maxing out your contributions if you're able to, and getting a company match that is going to just result in compounding upon compounding effects, which really is, as they love to say, the eighth wonder of the world is compounding because of how much wealth it can generate along the way. As I said before, 7 years, you can double your wealth every 7 years. Every 10 years, if you're getting a 7% return, every 7 years, if you're getting a 10% return. And that is incredibly valuable.
Love it. The eighth wonder of the world. I'm going to start having to say that. Ainsley, how about you?
I say my biggest takeaway or aha moment is really just, we talked about so many different factors, so many different unknowns that can impact your ability to retire comfortably. In my opinion, the only way to really feel confident about your decision to retire, when and how to retire, is to build that financial plan. I encourage people, I mean, Dan said earlier, you've got to start saving and planning for retirement at an early point in time. But sooner rather than later, I also encourage you to have that financial plan and work with that advisor to have that discussion as to whether or not you're ready for retirement, because you don't want to get to a point where you're maybe into your late 60s and then that's when you decide to have a financial plan and you realize, oh, actually, I probably could have retired 5 years ago, because that's the time that you're not going to get back. I've met with so many people who work into their even 70s and they get there and they realize that they could have retired years ago and they wish that they had, because they're enjoying retirement so much. And so not only is it the sooner that you build that financial plan, the earlier it is that you're going to be able to figure out when you can retire, but if you can start saving and planning for it even earlier, you might have a little bit more control over when and how you retire.
Great. Thank you, Ainsley. I appreciate it. Great. That's all we have for today here, everyone. Thank you to Dan Sansaroli and Ainsley Carbone for your participation and for all of yours, as well as the UBS Chief Investment Office's support. I learned a lot from your perspectives, and I want to say a huge thank you to our audience for tuning into the OPO podcast. On behalf of the UBS O'Leary Partners, I hope you found today's topics impactful. As well as a follow-up, my team and I are always accessible for questions or a second opinion, especially if you'd like to take a deeper dive into your personal retirement scenario. And with that, be on the lookout for future episodes with Aha Moments. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.